Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Stephen Arvin, registration number 39020, representing Mr. Denny Martinez. This court should reverse Mr. Martinez's conviction because the trial court injected language into the jury instructions, precluding the jury from considering Mr. Martinez's theory of defense. There are different ways to look at the issue that Mr. Martinez has raised in his briefs. But regardless of how the issue is viewed, it is clear that the trial court's language precluded the jury from considering Mr. Martinez's theory of defense to the offense that he was convicted of, which was first-degree assault. Specifically, the trial court instructed the jury that they cannot even consider Mr. Martinez's theory of the case, which was the lesser offense of accessory after the fact, until after they had unanimously agreed that Mr. Martinez was not guilty of first-degree assault. And no other jury instruction mentioned this defense or conveyed the defense to the jury. Under the court's instruction, then, the jury could not consider Mr. Martinez's theory of defense to first-degree assault unless they had already acquitted him of that crime. And notably, the state does not even dispute that the jury instruction had this effect in its answer brief.
Mr. Arvin, doesn't this inure to the defendant's benefit since it's a lesser non-included offense, and typically as a lesser non-included rather than a lesser included, the defendant could possibly be convicted of both?
Not in this case, Your Honor, because the lesser non-included in this case constituted Mr. Martinez's theory of defense to the greater offense. By completely precluding the jury from considering Mr. Martinez's offense to the greater offense, theory of defense to the greater offense, any meager benefit that might have been gained by a hard transition instruction was vastly overwhelmed by basically destroying his defense to the greater offense.
Mr. Arvin, does it make a difference whether accessory after the fact, indeed, one could be guilty of that and be guilty of the offenses of attempted murder and assault?
No, Your Honor, not in this case.
My understanding is there was some confusion in the law, in the briefs, as to whether one could be convicted of both accessory after the fact and the attempted first-degree murder and assault. So where does that play into this analysis?
In this case, I don't think that that particular consideration really has any relevance. As was discussed in the briefs, there is some ambiguity in the law regarding that point. However, regardless of how that plays out, Mr. Martinez was completely precluded. The jury was completely precluded from letting the jury consider his theory of defense because of the way the court instructed the jury.
He was able to argue, though, that he wasn't guilty of the primary assault, but only guilty of covering up afterwards. So wasn't that the theory of defense, and wasn't that a basis that was argued to the jury?
It was argued to the jury, Your Honor, that is correct. But the argument did Mr. Martinez no good because the trial court explicitly instructed the jury not to consider that theory of the case, a lesser included defense, until they unanimously acquitted him of the greater offense.
Well, they could have acquitted him of the greater offense on that basis, though, that he wasn't involved in the assault and was only guilty in the cover-up. So what they were precluded from doing is returning a different conviction on accessory.
I would respectfully disagree with that, Your Honor. To the extent that the accessory after the fact charge was the theory of defense, as the court acknowledged that it was, and as the defense counsel characterized it, the jury was, again, explicitly instructed that they cannot consider that defense, that theory of the case, in considering the greater offense.
Well, they weren't instructed that they couldn't consider that argument. They just couldn't return a conviction until after they had acquitted on the greater.
That's true, but I would submit that the offense itself equaled the theory of the case. And so the jury was able to consider the lesser offense, then they couldn't consider the theory of defense to the greater offenses either. The two were intertwined. Our law unequivocally establishes that a defendant has a right to a theory of a case instruction and that it must be given if there's any evidence to support it. The trial court was clearly aware of its obligation to instruct the jury on Mr. Martinez's theory of defense. It stated in the jury instruction conference that it is, quote, obligated where the court can do so to instruct the jury on the theory of the case. And the trial court acknowledged that the instruction issue, as I mentioned, constituted Mr. Martinez's theory of defense. With its bad awareness of this, the trial court precluded the jury from considering the defense. And by doing so, I would argue the court effected a greater harm than if it had simply refused to issue the theory of the case instruction at all. If a court refuses to issue defense instruction, then it is still a possibility that the jury might consider the defense. The jury has simply not been instructed on the defense. Here, because the jury was explicitly instructed not to consider the theory of defense, then assuming that the jury followed the court's instruction, as we should, there is no possibility that the jury took the defense into account.
Mr. Arvin, I know some of the questions were getting to this, but I think this is the difficult point here. When you're instructed, you're instructed that you cannot consider the theory of defense until after you acquit of the greater offenses, what does that mean? Does that mean you're instructed you cannot consider the evidence, you cannot consider the argument, you cannot consider the elements? What does it mean?
Well, I think in this case, the accessory after the fact instruction, the elements of that defense, were so essential to Mr. Martinez's theory of defense that it was tantamount to saying that you could not consider Mr. Martinez's theory of defense. Mr. Martinez's entire defense rested on the notion that he satisfied only the elements of the accessory after the fact instruction rather than the elements of the greater offenses. So I think by instructing the jury that they cannot consider that lesser offense, then the court, again, effectively instructed the jury that they cannot consider his theory of defense.
Did the defendant object to that transition instruction?
No, Your Honor. Though the defense counsel did tender a jury instruction that did not contain the erroneous language.
So you're saying that the standard of review is what?
Plain error, Your Honor.
Okay.
I thought I'd reserve the remainder of my time unless this court has any further questions.
May it please the court, my name is Brock Swanson, attorney registration number 39116, and I represent the people of the state of Colorado in this matter. The defendant was charged with attempted first-degree murder and first-degree assault. The evidence that the victim had committed one of these charged crimes was strong, including the victim's testimony, identifying the defendant as one of his attackers, and the defendant's own statement that the victim would not die because he had not hit him in the head. However, at defendant's request, the jury was also instructed on the offense of accessory to a crime. In the trial court, the defendant took the position that he could not be convicted both of one of the charged offenses and as an accessory. And the trial court cooperated with the defendant in crafting an instruction that embodied that premise. When the instruction was completed, defense counsel affirmed that he had no objection to the instruction that was ultimately given to the jury, other than on grounds that are not at issue in this appeal.
You say the defendant took the position. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that something that the trial court asked? In your brief, you seem to suggest that the defendant was surprised that he couldn't be convicted of both.
I would say that the idea was certainly first presented by the trial court, but the defense counsel certainly adopted that position as his own.
Well, defense counsel said it's more simple that way, but what does that mean exactly? Adopting it as his own?
I think it means that he certainly did not say, no, I don't think that's right, or I don't think that I can be, I think I can be convicted of both of those offenses. I think the way that the argument goes that to me, at least, it's clear that defense counsel accepted that position and believed that it would be more favorable for his client.
What do you make of the line of cases that suggests that he can't indeed be convicted of both?
I think that in this case, he could be convicted of both. I think that Broom deals with a very specific situation where there is only one act at issue, and it concluded that the legislative intent behind these two statutes, in its opinion, would not allow a conviction on that basis. And I think that is even an arguable proposition that Broom stands for. However, I think that this situation does not fall within that narrow circumstances that were at issue in Broom. And the Agger case is more analogous to this, where there's evidence of more than one act, of a number of acts that the defendant could have committed, both being a complicitor or a principal in the charged offenses, and thereafter aiding his brother in cleaning up after those offenses, and thereby become exposed to accessory liability as well. So I think ultimately the defendant got a benefit here, which inured entirely to his benefit, that he was not entitled to, that he was only exposed to punishment for the charged offense and not to accessory because they found him guilty on that offense.
Certainly, though, if the jury had been given the option of considering the accessory, that you could say that they might have been perhaps less likely to return a conviction on the assault and just return a conviction on the accessory, not to have convicted of both. And so wasn't the defendant harmed in that manner?
You know, I don't think that that is necessarily accurate. I think that hypothetically, there's a lot of discussion about the possible incentives on a jury that these different kinds of transition instructions can result in. However, to find in this case plain error, that you would have to find that there's a reasonable probability it actually affected the verdict in this case, and these instructions on lesser offenses, they're not a defense in and of themselves to a greater crime. The defendant's defense here to the charged crimes was a general denial that the prosecution had proven beyond a reasonable doubt the elements of those offenses. Being guilty of a lesser offense doesn't negate any of those elements or excuse or justify that conduct. Rather, the cases have all identified that instruction on a lesser offense is permitted as a prophylactic measure to eliminate the incentive for jurors to disregard the instructions and convict on a greater offense than the defendant actually committed, because they believe that the defendant is guilty of some crime and deserves to be punished, but don't have the option of convicting on any lesser offense. So I think the question is whether in this case, given these instructions, there's a reasonable probability that the instructions are so plainly erroneous that there's a reasonable probability the jury actually convicted on first degree assault because it believed that he would otherwise escape punishment for his actions. And I think the jury clearly could not have gotten that impression after hearing the defense counsel's arguments and seeing the instructions as a whole.
What about the obviousness of the error here?
Mm-hmm.
Could you address that?
Yeah, I think that there is there's case law discussing lesser included instructions and the transition instructions that are appropriate in there, and I can discuss that further. I'm not sure I clearly outlined all of that the state of the law there, if you're interested. There is no case law that states what transition instruction would be applicable in this situation, which is rather unique in that it's a lesser not included, and at least as it was framed to the trial court, something that you could not be convicted of both crimes. And I don't think that the answer is necessarily going to be the same or as obvious at this point as to what instruction is appropriate in those circumstances. And so we should not find that the trial court so obviously erred that reversal is required, absent any objection by the defense counsel at trial.
Mr. Swanson, you agree that the court and the parties below agreed this was a theory of defense?
I think it may have used that terminology. I think in Trujillo, the Colorado Supreme Court really explained that you have a theory of defense, and in conjunction with that theory of defense, the defendant is entitled to an instruction on a lesser non-included offense. It's purely for those the prophylactic reasons that I identified earlier.
Well, let me just ask this, just based on what happened below, is everyone was agreeing that the defense was, I didn't do the attempted murder, I didn't do the assault, my involvement here was limited to accessory after the fact, that's what would explain if there was any blood on me, or it would explain the evidence, and that was the defendant's defense.
And maybe I'm just arguing about a minor difference in terms here. I think that was definitely his theory of the case, was that that is what occurred. I did not commit the charged offenses. I did commit this other offense, and that explains my involvement and the extent of my involvement here. However, I think the actual lesser, being guilty of the lesser not included here, is not itself a defense, so I hesitate to call that his theory of defense.
Well, this is, okay, this is my next question that follows it up then. If defendant's argument is, my defense explains what evidence incriminates me. Mm-hmm. Can the jury be instructed that you cannot consider that unless you actually acquit me of the assault and the attempted murder, and only then can you consider the evidence that might incriminate me for a different purpose than as evidence of proof of the greater crimes?
I think that could be a problem, but I don't think that this instruction says that they can't consider the evidence as to whether it's been proven beyond reasonable doubt that he was guilty of the charged offenses. I think what the instruction says is you can't consider the accessory charge. And to the extent his arguments also address the other charge, I don't think the instruction prohibits consideration of that at all.
Okay, and I think that does answer then the question I asked Mr. Arvin, is what does that instruction mean? Does it mean can you consider the evidence, can you consider the theory of defense, or can you consider the elements of accessory? What did it mean, that instruction? So your point is that it's saying you cannot consider the elements of accessory until...
Yeah, and I think it's also worth noting here that in this case, the evidence on the accessory charge was overwhelming and was conceded by the defendant. So simply put, I don't think there's anything really to consider on that charge. I'm not sure how, if this had been instructed differently, it really could have affected the, in practice, the course of the proceedings and how they would be considering these offenses. The only thing I think that this actually did, this instruction, is prevented them from checking guilty on the verdict form after they'd found the defendant guilty of first-degree assault, also on the verdict form for the accessory to a crime.
Mr. Swanson, do you know of any case in Colorado that has upheld an acquit-first instruction in any circumstance?
You know, I'm not aware of one, and perhaps I should discuss, I think, the state of the law on the lesser included offenses. I don't think I totally made that clear in my briefs, and I omitted some relevant information. But in Padilla, the court approved the instruction that's generally given, which is if you do not believe that the prosecution has proven beyond a reasonable doubt that the greater offense, then you may convict on or consider the lesser offense. That instruction, under the framework that I put forth in my brief, I think would be most accurately described as a modified acquittal first instruction. Then we have several Court of Appeals decisions that have pretty summarily concluded that a hard transition, a total acquittal first transition, is erroneous, and they don't have a lot of analysis in there, so I'm not sure exactly why they've reached that conclusion. I think the initial case relied on citing a case from another jurisdiction, Michigan, I believe. Then we have Richardson, which is Colorado Supreme Court opinion, and in a footnote they noted that Colorado follows the soft transition approach, which would allow them to consider and enter a verdict on a lesser offense without having first rejected the greater offense. Now, I didn't put this in my briefs, and for that I apologize, but I think there's another little piece of information here, which is that there's a statute, which is Section 18.1408, subsection 8, that prohibits courts from instructing the jury to enter a guilty verdict on a lesser offense if the jury has not unanimously acquitted on the greater, unless the prosecution agrees. So I think the full picture is that a modified acquittal first is permissible. A true soft transition is also permissible if the prosecution agrees. So there's a range of permissible transition instructions. If this were a lesser included offense case, I would be taking the position that those other Court of Appeals decisions that have found that to be plainly erroneous and requiring reversal, there are a couple of them, others have found it not to be plain error, but that those were wrongly decided and should not be followed in this case. I guess the other thing I would say is that I'm not sure that this court needs to address this issue because in the trial court, the defendant did advocate for this instruction and approve its final form. So I think this court could conclude that he's invited any error and could decline to consider the issue he presents here on appeal. So, if there are no further questions, I'd ask that you affirm this judgment. Thanks.
Mr. Arvin, you have about 7.5 minutes.
Regarding the Attorney General's statements concerning hard transitional instructions, modified transitional instructions, I think all those arguments have to fail in light of the fact that this was the defendant's only theory of the case instruction at trial. There was no other instruction in the jury instructions that conveyed Mr. Martinez's theory of defense.
Not a theory of defense instruction, so to speak, in that they charged the accessory crime. It's just the problem with the transition. And so could you address the obviousness of that error, considering that the cases that criticize that transition are all lesser included and not non-lesser included?
Certainly, Your Honor. Well, I think the law is relatively clear that the sort of hard transitional instruction that occurred in this case is not permitted under Colorado law.
But as to lessers, has it ever been applied to a non-lesser?
No, it hasn't been explicitly applied to a non-lesser included instruction, Your Honor. But the considerations that have led our courts to prohibit that kind of instruction for a lesser included instruction are no different than they would apply to a lesser non-included.
Except for the fact that typically a lesser non-included, the defendant can be convicted of both. And so that's much different from a lesser included. Now, arguably, this one works more like a lesser included if you buy into the whole line of case law that says you can't be convicted as a principal and an accessory. But that's the only reason why this lesser non-included would be different. And no one objected and brought that to the court's attention.
You raised some good points, Your Honor. Let me first address that is true that with a lesser non-included, you can be convicted of both. But in terms of the concerns of our courts as to why they prohibit such a hard transitional instruction, our courts have expressed concern that with such a hard transitional instruction, a juror convinced that the defendant has committed some crime, but not necessarily convinced that he has committed the greater offense, will simply convict on the greater offense rather than the lesser offense, because that juror will not have the opportunity to consider that lesser offense. And I think that concern still comes into play with a lesser non-included. So I think in terms of the difference between lesser includeds and lesser non-includeds, the difference has no meaning in terms of analyzing this issue. Regarding the obviousness of the court's error, again, this goes back to the fact that this was the defendant's only theory of the case instruction. The defendant characterized it as his theory of the case instruction, and the trial court acknowledged it as a theory of the case instruction. The trial court even stated that it had an obligation to instruct the jury on the defendant's theory of the case. So the trial court should have been aware of what it was doing when it precluded the jury from considering that theory of the case instruction. So, you know, the law concerning theory of the case instructions, their importance goes back years. It's well established. It's something that the court should have been aware of. In terms of the defense counsel's purported acquiescence to the instruction, I think if you look at defense counsel's comments in context, he was merely trying to understand a confusing area of the law in his discussions with the court. And I think that is made obvious by the fact that defense counsel tendered an instruction that did not have the error at issue. I think defense counsel was not advocating for this language in the jury instruction. That's made obvious by the fact that he tendered a jury instruction without that error.
And under his instruction, could the defendant have been convicted of both? And wasn't that the situation that the trial court was attempting to address in crafting this transition?
I don't believe under the wording of defense counsel's instruction could have been convicted of both. However, the jury could have considered his theory of defense. The jury would not have been precluded from considering the defendant's theory of defense. So his instruction did not contain the error that's at issue here. So in terms of the plain error analysis or invited error analysis, I just don't think the record supports that this was an invited error. And of course, in considering that analysis further, one has to consider whether there's any strategic benefit that could realistically be obtained from the error. And again, I just don't think destroying the defendant's theory of defense is the kind of thing that any defense counsel would regard as a strategic benefit.
Mr. Arvin, could you address what Mr. Swanson was stating about the nature of the theory of defense as being general denial as to the greater offenses, and then also, by the way, I was guilty of accessory after the fact, and so it was not a justification for the greater?
Mm-hmm. Well, his theory of the case was clear that Mr. Martinez was just an accessory after the fact. I mean, that was a concentrated theory of defense. So again, defense counsel argued thoroughly to the jury that Mr. Martinez was only guilty of the accessory after the fact charge. And the jury instruction that the court ultimately submitted, with the language that the court injected into the jury instruction, at least did not properly convey that theory to the jury. And as I discussed in my briefs, it effectively precluded the jury from even considering that defense. Our law talks about how a defendant has a right to a theory of the case instruction, and he was at the very least denied that right. But I think if you look at the instruction and consider the effect it had on the jury, I think it went further than simply denying him the right to theory of the case instruction. It precluded the jury from even considering the defense. So this affects an even greater harm than if the court had simply refused to issue a theory of the case instruction. Does the court have any further questions?
It's not.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Arvin. Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Thank you both for your excellent arguments. They will be helpful to the division. This matter will stand submitted, and an opinion will be issued in due course.